This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a special podcast. We are on location at Woody's Pub out in Coquitlam, and we want to thank all the staff here at Woody's for making us feel at home and having us out here. Jeff Patterson, along with Jason Botchert, of course. The podcast, always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. Even when we take the show on the road, we're never the fine folks at Eagle Ridge are never far from our mind. So we tell you this every time we do the podcast. Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, they're proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express, and even though their season just wrapped up, got knocked out in the BCHL playoffs, still big supporters of community sport throughout Coquitlam. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, check them out online, eagleridgegm.com, or you can find them in the showroom, 2595 Barnett Highway. All right, Botch, the city needs some heroes. Let's be honest, this has not been a good week in the city of Vancouver. Brock Besser is done for the season. People turn to you and me for some entertainment, for some positivity. Just to, you know, cheer them up. Because, let's be honest, we both sat through last night. There was nothing that was going to cheer people up last night. So it's on us. This is a heavy responsibility.
It was definitely hard to be positive watching that Coyotes game. And I actually have this, like, I kind of talked about it last podcast about how all of the positivity, it was almost like, felt like I was on drugs, like it felt like high, and I felt like on top of the world that I was so positive. And then I started seeing the reaction, like I had this almost alter ego posit forward where I just spent like a day or 2 days writing positive stories, having positive tweets, and I'm telling you right now, I have never seen the reaction that, like, as much support and interaction. Like, I had one tweet which had like 500 responses. I've never had a tweet get 500 responses, and I had this epiphany that, like, some, like, I found this sweet spot in when I'm positive, because my I consider my base audience I'll call them skeptics. I'll call them educated skeptics.
Fair enough.
Or enlightened skeptics. Like, that's my base. When I go super positive, I think that side loves it because they see some sarcasm in it. And the other side, the kind of anti-negative, anti-neg side that's in the city's divided.
Yep.
The other side, they're in on anything that they can grasp to that's positive. So I've kind of brought things together. And now I'm starting to think of all these storylines where I can present an idea that's going to bring the city together. So I'm ready to join you and try to be the hero that this team and this city needs over the next year.
All right, well, we're on Facebook Live, and people are listening after the fact to the podcast. There's a live component, and we say hi to everybody that's joining us on Facebook. And if they are watching, they can probably see in the corner of the screen just this glow, and they're wondering what it is. And you talk about us, but the guy that has set the bar for positivity is standing right there to our right. The stanchion has joined us here. Now, you know how we feel about guests on the podcast, so we're both delighted to see him here. He's not going to make an appearance, but he did the Provies on Friday night, the loss to Nashville, and again, just took that positive bar and raised it through the roof.
Every angle of it was positive. Every mention was positive. And he had, now, just talking to him, he said he had never, again, he had the same reaction that I'm just telling you about. He had never got that much, you know, audience and that many people fired up and that many positive kind of reviews on one of his versions of the Promies. So again, it makes you wonder if this may be the way to go.
Well, have we been doing it wrong then all this time? Is that, like, I'm starting to doubt myself. Like, I've been at this a while, and now, like, I'm really, for the first time after all these years, I'm starting to doubt myself. Is that what the people want?
And I will say, that version of the Province, that's what I'm promising the Vancouver Canucks.
You made the offer
if
here.
If they get a top 90 pick, and I just want to get it out there once again, because I do, I want to get this message to Jim, I want to get it to Trevor. I want Travis to know as well, because I think that he may read the Provies. They're getting a full week of that, all positivity, and all they have to do is trade for a top 90 pick before the June draft.
Right, because when we did this last week, we gave our thoughts because that black cloud of negativity was, like, the city was just socked in, right? Like, we've, you know those days in Vancouver where you can't see, the city's just socked in with fog.
Right.
Like, that black cloud of negativity was hovering, and then Elliot Friedman went on the radio. We talked about that last week. Then Friedman comes to town, and look, people saw the picture. You talk about reaction. I couldn't help it. Like, come on.
Yeah, you had to do that?
I had to do that.
Why?
Have you come down from that high? Like, I've known you for years. I've never seen you smile like you were smiling. Never!
Yeah,
I said it in the tweet. The Eagles Super Bowl, like, you were sick. You were curled up in a ball. You were green. You may have been happy on the inside they won, but I don't think you were beaming the way you were when Elliot Friedman, and he came to you. Like, you didn't have to go to him.
No.
He came to you. Yeah. I watched it all unfold. He sat down beside you, and you just started beaming.
Well, he was pretty funny. He had lots of funny stuff to say, only wrote about some of it. And he did belly out. Like, he came up, basically, he entered that's my office, right there where the pick was taken. He came into my office, and he said, interview me. And I was like, and then we started talking about other things. It all wrapped up, and he said, no, seriously, like, interview me right now. I want you to interview me. So I was like, fuck, okay, I'll fucking interview. Let's go. So I started asking him all that stuff, but... I started, like, when Friedman said, and he walked a lot of it back, that when we were talking there, but when he had the appearance on Sportsnet 650 and mentioned all those things, like, it did, and you know, like, I had a lot of self-reflection about it, because I tried to be self-aware, so I'm like, fuck, am I, like, is it that bad, is it that negative, are these, so I reached out, and I was reaching out all over the place. I was asking people to rewatch the Benning presser. I got a message from a super prominent Canadian media guy who texted me. I actually explained all this to you, and he said, well, there are some things. And I'm like, well, what things? And he said, well, you guys asked more pointed, tough questions of Travis than Babcock would ever get. Like, he'd never get the detailed questions you guys asked. He'd never get the questions about lineup decisions and stuff like that. Like, that would never happen in Toronto. And I was like, fuck that. Like, give me a break. Like, come on. You're, like, totally bullshitting me. But I went on a jag for the next 40 minutes. And all I could think about was Babcock pressers. And I looked them up, and I was typing them in. And I got pretty much every Babcock presser I could find on YouTube that was after a loss. I listened to them all. And he was right. Like, fuck, he was bang on. Like, he doesn't, like, he just gets softball after softball. Like, the questions would be stuff like, you know, they'd lose 5-2.
Yeah.
Remember, it was a 5-2 loss, and one of the questions was, did you do enough in the third period to get your momentum that you can carry into the next game? And I was like, what? Like, that's really a question after a 5-2 loss? So I did end up conceding that point, but I think that Friedman did walk a lot of it back, and he said, like, look, the issues in Vancouver are similar across Canada, and if I say that free agents may be wary of coming to Vancouver to sign contracts as free agents, they're going to be wary of those things in every city. But I don't think, like, has that been a problem? No one wants to leave it. Like, we can't get rid of Edler. He won't leave. The Sedins won't play anywhere else. Garrison never wanted to go. Bieksa never wanted to go. Like, no one ever wants to leave.
And then and then July 1st, all these, come on in. The door's open.
Rabada didn't want to go. Yeah. Hamhuis didn't want to go. Like, the list goes on. Like, yeah, Kessler wanted out, but that's, like, Kessler's, like, that's an outlier.
Right.
And Luongo wanted out, but that was because of the way he felt treated by the coaching staff and management.
No, it's funny you mentioned that Leaf story. I think back, you know, early on in my career, I remember the Leafs came to Vancouver, and the Canucks beat them handily. I want to say it was like 4-1. And Carlisle was the coach at the time. Same thing, post-game. And I'm thinking, like, oh, man, like, he's going to just get grilled. And I was covering the visitors that night. So I was in this scrum, and I'm thinking, like, oh, man, like, how's this going to go down? And the first question was, like, your penalty kill was 4-for-5. You got to be happy about that. I was like, what? what? Like,
yeah. But like, people should honestly, if you have time and you think about it, like, peel one and listen to it. Like, there's one guy that they have that always asks me a super, like, this is the same guy every time. He asks, like, the friendliest question you could ever. Like, it's fluffy and you want to hug it. Like, it's such a friendly, and every time they let him, and that sets the tone. And they're always around 2-3 minutes. And I look at our pressers with Green, and some of them are like 8 minutes. Like, we're grinding them out for 9 minutes. Why did Jake only get, you know, one shift in the third? Why did you do this on the top line? And we're asking them all this stuff. And Babs, apparently, like, I guess I can't speak for the reasoning behind the question he gets. But my guess is he probably wouldn't stand for really tough questions, which means I guess he can't coach in Vancouver.
Guess not. So where do we stand, though, on this positivity trip now? Because in this week, the best player the Canucks have had in years is done, and that's the shot, and the chaser was the worst game of the season. I think it's 17 shots against the last place team in the NHL. So, like, again, you can want to be positive, but how can you be positive?
No, I don't think, like, realistically, there's not a lot of positives to pull right now. All we can hope for is that they don't lose 9 in a row, that they don't lose 8 in a row. This is a really, like, bad team, and some of it is because, you know, it was a poor construct to begin with, and other part, like, there are a lot of injuries right now, right? Like, you know, a lot of these main guys that would be in the lineup are hurt, and even Travis is saying there's only a handful of guys that are secured spots for next year, which sure seems to me saying we only have a few guys that are really NHL players, and the rest are kind of trying to prove it. So, you know, where is the positivity to come from? It's going to have, like, there aren't a lot of guys you can pick out. It can come from Leipzig. It can come from Horvat, who I think has to carry a load on his shoulders. That, like, this is his team, right? Like, this, people want to blame the Sedins, and they want to pin them on it, and they did have really bad games. But this team and how it performs down the stretch, it's going to be on Bo Horvat. Like, he's the guy that gets 20 minutes a game. He's the guy that's out there, like, in that third period in that Arizona game. Hedrick only played 4 minutes. Horvat was 7-plus minutes in that game. That's who Travis is going to lean on. Horvat didn't have a good game. So you can't say it's because he played well and Hedrick didn't. It's just Travis is going to lean on him down the stretch, and especially in those third periods.
Travis Green asks repeatedly, like, I've lost count of how many times he's kind of asked this rhetorical question about, you know, is this a guy I can win with? What if the answer is no to every guy that they're experimenting with? Like, obviously, they've got a bunch of tweeners right now. Like, what if the answer is no?
No.
Goldobin and Mott and Boucher's back up and Archibald, and the jury's still out on Jake, although he's playing better. But, like, what if the answer is no to all these guys?
Well, it may be. Like, when I look at the defense, I see a lot of no's. And I see some no's up front, especially when, you know, you take the Sedins out of the equation, because they're not really going to be around when the team is good in 3 years. We know that we know Besser's a check mark, but even Besser was grinding on him. You know, that last week leading into the Clutterbuck hit, I want him to play a 200-foot game. I've been meeting with him to have him play, you know, this big defensive-style game. And look, that's not why he got hurt. But at the same point, like, I don't want to see Brock Besser try to hit Cal Clutterbuck with, like, almost a hip check. It was almost like it reminds me a little too much of a Ham Hughes on Lucic back in the day. Like, he gets down, gets low, into the boards. I'm sorry, if that's the qualification of a guy you want to win with, like, to win, you need Brock Besser healthy. Like, that's the number one thing you need. I don't mind if he's out there hitting guys. I don't want him hitting Clutterbuck.
But it's Clutterbuck. Like, I can't imagine being an NHL guy and seeing Clutterbuck right there and not wanting to just drill him through the boards.
Like, it's like a dick factor. He's like, that guy's a dick and I'm coming for him.
Absolutely. Just
look, I got you. But, like, there's high, like, you go on YouTube and it's like top 10 Clutterbuck. Like, he blows guys up all the time.
No, I didn't understand sort of the spinning Besser. Like, we've never seen that all season. And he chooses that point against the Islanders, like, on his final shift of the third period, turns out to be his final shift of the season, to do some sort of weird, like, spinning, like as you said, it was kind of a hip check. Like, where did that come from?
And did it come from Travis saying, grind it out, like 200 foot, like today, this came up today. Like, this storyline is continuing because today, IMAX asked out of the blue, like, does Bo Horvat hit enough? Now they want Bo Horvat. And I know that there is a percentage of this fan base that wants Horvat to be played tougher. They want him to be more physical, use his body more, play more like a power forward. I've got some time with that, but there is enough on that guy's plate. I don't want him learning the art of hitting at this point of the season, because that's the answer Travis gave to IMAC was basically, does he hit enough? No, not really. There's an art to hitting, like, as though we're going to teach him that art. I don't want... Teach him how to pass better. Like, that's... I'll be on board that. Teach him how to shoot more in certain positions. I'll be on board that. They need that guy to be a big-time point producer. I'm not so sure I'd be worried about Bo Horvat hitting more.
All right, so Western season is done. It lasted 62 games. We all know how it started. A couple of healthy scratches. And then it ends with him out of the lineup. Like, what's your takeaway? Like, it was an amazing season. You and I had the good fortune of being out on the road and seeing him do his thing. And, you know, whether it was in Pittsburgh or in Toronto or, you know, I came up with a list of his top five goals. That Toronto one still, like, we talked about it to death, but it still stands above, I think, the Toronto game. The game in Toronto might have been his best game. But, like, what's your takeaway, ultimately? Like, if you're writing the Brock Besser first season story.
Like, I would say that there was a two-month stretch when he was as dangerous and as effective as anyone I've seen, been watching, covering the Canucks. And that includes the great runs of the Art Rosses, because he played in November and December. He played 28, or there was a span of 28 games where he scored 19 goals. In the other 34, he scored 10. So in that stretch of 28 games when he was scoring those 19 goals, and guys were saying his shot was better than Naslin's, guys were saying he's a better goal scorer than Burry, I was like, maybe you want to just hold on for a second. But I do understand where the sentiment came from, because I was caught up in it too. It was as exciting as I've seen for any kind of goal scoring Canucks, you know, since 2005 when I got here to Vancouver. And the great part, the part I loved most about it, was a good portion of it came when it should have been the lowest point. Like, I saw you asking the other night, you were asking Henrik, and this is like, this was a great scene when we came, that they just had this terrible game against the Arizona Coyotes. They got smoked, they were gone. It was only, you know, it was a one goal game, but they were just dominating. They never had the puck. They produced no offense. There was no high danger scoring chances for them. None in that entire game. There was one tip shot by Gagne. That's it. And we came into the room to ask those guys, and Henrik came storming out at us like he was in Braveheart. Like, he's like, I'm taking on negativity. Like, bring it right here. I'm going to, like... And that's what good leaders and good captains do. And I do worry, like, is that component going to be there? Like, is Besser going to be able to handle those types of questions? Is Horvat going to be handle those types of situations when the Canadiens are gone? Because they took it. Like, Henrik took it, and he stayed there for as long as, like, I could have talked to him for an hour and a half if I wanted to. And all of my questions for the entire 90 minutes could have been along the lines of, why were you so shitty tonight? And he would have took it all. And he would have had no problem with it. Because he understands when the team plays poorly like that, someone has to take responsibility. Someone has to be accountable. Someone has to answer these questions. And he does a really good job of that. And it was incredible to see him do that. So, you know, as great as Besser's run was and as great as his season was, I do worry, you know, in the next couple of years when the heat starts turning on him. And I think the big question for the Canucks when it comes to Besser and the season he had is, when do they extend him? When do they try to re-sign him? Right. And all of the, everything I've heard from all different sources is that they're gonna push to sign him this summer. And from this fact alone, that he scored 19 of his goals in 28 games, it was an incredible run. But I would say chill.
Yeah.
let's see if he can do it again. Because there are other guys that have had great starts, like Eichel and others, to their careers have kind of, you know, like it doesn't always trend up. It doesn't always go up like the way you think it will. And he could easily, he could still be great, and he could take a step back next year. And I would say instead of betting on a really high shooting percentage year, instead of betting on an incredibly glorious streak of 2 months and saying, we've got to sign him now, I would wait another year.
I think back to, well, there was about, November was a remarkable month. I mean, the hat trick on the Saturday night against, matched up against Crosby, you know, his first NHL hat trick. Like, the building hasn't been alive like it was that night. That was a fun night at the rink. And that started this run that included back-to-back two-goal games at the start of the road trip in Philadelphia, and then back into Pittsburgh, and we know the Matt Murray storyline, but five of his goals against, like, he just shut Matt Murray up. And, you know, people had been begging for Edler to pass it to Besser, and Edler finally did, and, you know, just blew it that one time. Like, that, we were waiting for that moment. That one stands out for me. And then in December, we had the run of 8 goals in 10 games.
Yeah.
And in the middle of it, he got hurt, the Calgary game, where he blocked the shot, and people thought, he's done. Like, he's going to be out forever. He comes back and scores in 4 straight after, like, the remarkable healing powers. Like, the storylines and the way the city was just hanging on his every move. Like, I'm with you. Like, I haven't felt that or seen that about one player. You know, because the Twins, it was always the two of them, right? Like,
yeah.
And so even when Daniel got hurt for that one stretch there, the 29 games, and Henrik took over, you knew Daniel was coming back. But here with Besser, like, it was a one-man show,
right.
And it got to that point, and we heard it a lot. Like, people didn't care if they won or lost. Horvat was out of the lineup, Sutter was out of the lineup, Berchi's out of the lineup. It didn't matter. People expected them to lose. The only question people had was, is Besser going to score? And the answer was yes, way more often than it was no. And he got his 20th before Christmas, which I just thought was cool to, you know, get to that threshold before the Christmas break. But you're right, to your point about contracts. Like, after that game in Toronto, and again, that might have been the best, most complete game he played all season, you know, it was a struggle for him after that. The goals didn't flow for him. The Tampa game where he got injured, you could tell that the shot wasn't there for a two-week span. So, yeah, like, it was great that he caught fire for a while, but look, the Canucks might want to sign him. I'm with you, though. I would hold off. Yeah. And I think you pointed it out in the Provies. Look, if he has a 35 or a 40 goal season next year, then pay the guy.
Yeah, he'll be happy about it.
Absolutely.
And I love, like, the reaction from the city. And I think that this part of the equation got lost in the Friedman, the Friedmanists, when they talk about the city being so negative, the media being so negative, the market being so negative, they sure weren't negative about Brock Besser. Like, this city rallied around Besser in a way that it wasn't like that with the Canadiens. It was a slow roll for Kessler, and even then, a lot of the people were like, do we really like him? Naslin, you know, had guys who were like, is he passionate enough? Does he care enough? Is he... So, like they really supported. And I can even remember Friedman, like, in the fall, saying, like, I can't believe the hype on Besser. Like, I've never seen a guy hyped like this. Like Vancouver is hyping Besser. Like, all of us, everyone was super excited and really positive about him. And you, in fact, had a major role in his success and how the season panned out. I know his agent will get, I guess, 15% of his next contract. Maybe you could get 1 or 2%.
Maybe.
Because, I'll tell you what, the world changed. The world changed the day you and I were in Montreal and you asked Travis Green, why doesn't Edler pass to Besser? And that game, and he had a long answer, and that game, guess what? Edler passed to Besser multiple times. And it never became a storyline again. It never was, why the fuck isn't Edler passing to Besser? He did. For the rest of the season, when the chances were there, as much as he could, he passed the puck to Besser. He absolutely did, man. And you, my friend, changed history with that question.
I thought you were going
to say... I wanted to ask it. I had it planned. I was working on my question for like a week. I wanted to be the guy because I foresaw the possibility that the world could turn on this one question.
I'm
fucking so mad. Like, I am, like, when I'm watching those Packard videos. And I'm thinking, why are we so negative? I do have negative thoughts about you usurping me and taking that Edler, you know, why does he pass to Besser question?
I've always said, like, you know, I just feel like I, with the access that I've got or that we've got, like, I try to ask questions, and social media helps, because I like to think that I'm in tune with, you know, what's going on, where the storylines are. I ask questions that I think fans would if they were in that same spot.
Right.
So when I asked that question that night in Montreal, like, I just couldn't believe it. The reaction from our colleagues in the media, right. And it was a small script, like, they, just this look of, like, they couldn't get their heads around the fact that I was actually at, like, we'd all been talking about it.
Right.
I just asked the question, but, like, it was like, you know, time was suspended momentarily as they cross it, like, shit, did he just ask that? And yes, I did.
And things did change. And I think someone needs to send this clip to Babcock because he needs his media asking him tougher questions. Because what if he was coaching this team and everyone was scared to ask him why Edler... years would go by and Edler would be looking better off all the time. No one would be able to ask Babcock this question. And it did change things.
You wrote about Edler this week because he became the all-time leading scorer among Canuck defensemen. It's a modest total, which, again, speaks to what the Canucks have assembled over, you know, nearly a half a century. But still, somebody's got to be number one. It's now Alex Edler. He got there with a couple of assists in the Nashville game, I think, on Friday night. Before it went to overtime, they saluted him on the Jumbotron. He had this, like, this sheepish little wave. Like, I felt bad for him in that moment. Like, we know he doesn't seek the limelight, but all of a sudden he looks up and they're on the Jumbotron. Like, they're 326 points now, number one. And he kind of like, get the camera off. No, get the camera off me kind of wave. But it has been a kind of weird. I don't want to say weird career, because it's been a good career for him, but the relationship between the fan base and Alex Edler, and I think, and you know, it doesn't happen that often, but people base their view of Edler on their expectations of the guy so early in his career, rather right. than ultimately what he became. People still, I think, are angry that he didn't become what he showed he might become in the very right. early going.
You gotta get that, because he was... had a 49-point season. We had another season where he's on pace for 50-something points. We've seen him be dominant and physical and all of that. And I think the back injury and the surgery, the disc issues had a major impact on where his career ended up going. I appreciate the argument. Like, I do. I see where people are coming from. The Tortsier was, like, it was terrible. Like, it was, like, he wasn't good. He was extremely unlucky. He was playing on the wrong side all season long. Like, these great minds, like this collective of coaches that have gone on to win cups and Jack Adams, couldn't figure out that Edler couldn't play on the right side all year. Like, it's crazy to think that they couldn't figure that out, but it happened. I am a little surprised. When you look at the entirety of his career, though, now, when looking back, I am surprised that a lot of people say, no, he can't even consider him as one of the best defensemen in Canucks history. He's absolutely, without question, in that debate. And if you want to pick four guys and have a poll, that's cool. But he is one of those four guys. And he does, like, he loves Vancouver. Like, he must. He never wants to leave. He never wants to waive his no trade. Like, he must really love the city. Maybe more, like, I guess he loves Vancouver more than I do, because, like, I would, you know, if I was in a situation, I would leave. I would be like, I want to go win. Get me a cup. Get me a place where I have a chance at a playoff run, and I can be on a great team. But for some guys, that doesn't seem to be a priority. It hasn't been a thing that he's prioritized. And there's part of me that thinks, like, what's wrong with you? And then there's part of me that thinks that that's, you know, a show of good character, that he's got loyalty to this Canucks team. But there have been some, like, amazing peak Edler moments You know, I picked out the Drew Doughty hit. Yeah. I just, whenever I think Edler, that immediately jumps to mind. I think game five of the Stanley Cup Finals, the 1-0 win, and he was, he had like 10 hits in that game. He was rushing guys, he was moving the puck. Gallagher wrote this, like I was going back and reading the stories back then, and Gallagher had written this story, and right off the top, the lead was, I don't think Edler realizes how good he is, and that may go down on his tombstone. I honestly don't think he realizes how good he is and how good he can be, and how good his career has been.
And we've talked at length, the people that listen to the podcast know, like, he's a tough nut to crack, like, from a media standpoint, right?
That night?
Oh, yeah, absolutely he did. Which, again, like, it didn't surprise me that they made him available, but, yeah, like, when I asked him, have you had any contact from Matthias Olin in the lead-up to this milestone, and then, like, just big smile, and, oh, like, you know, once he started talking about Olin and what Olin meant to him, that was about as talkative as I can ever remember Alex Edler. And he was so excited that the record came on a Daniel goal set up also by him.
What's Edler excited? Like, Vegas
well,
excited?
Like, yeah, see, we're learning here as we go. Like,
what does
we're
Edler
peeling away the layers. It's taken us all this time, but now we're finding, and we get to go back to Vegas, like, Vegas Edler again.
What does, like, excited Edler look like? You saw it?
Yeah, like,
what was it?
Like,
what
he was
he
beaming.
Do?
Like, there was a big smile, and, like, you know, he's a pretty soft-spoken guy. Like, sometimes you have to lean in to hear him.
Right.
But this time, no, like, in a loud voice. Oh, absolutely. No, they're like, honest to God, there was a total difference in record-setting Edler. Like, for that moment, he was like, I am the man. Like, you're lucky that I'm talking to you because I am the record holder now. So, no, he was pumped.
I can't imagine that. I can't picture Edler acting like that. I can't picture him being like that. Like, he is, to me, like, more understated than Tanev. And that's part of it. Like, Bieksa was loved because of his personality. Like, he was a really good defenseman. Peak Bieksa was great. But, you know, that went away pretty quickly after the you know, 11, 12 seasons. And people still loved him because he had more charisma than any, you know, the entire locker room put together.
Podcast is coming to you live tonight on Facebook from Woody's Pub out in Coquitlam. And again, we want to thank them for being gracious hosts. The PatCast, always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. And I'm told that if you go to Eagle Ridge, if you're in the market for a vehicle, you go in and you mention that you're a PatCast listener, you're going to get discounts on truck accessories. So if you need a step bar for your truck, do you have a truck?
Me? No, I don't.
All right. Well, if you did have a truck, and you went in and you said, not only do I host the PatCast, yeah, I'm a big fan of the PatCast, they would give you a discount on a truck accessory of your choice. So go in, talk it over. Again, if you're starting a vehicle search, EagleRidgeGM.com is the website. Now, speaking of websites and just the social media space, we got to get to this, because this was one of the stories of this past week. And that was the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, who has so many issues. Like, we can't even begin to list the number of issues that he has right now on a team that lost to the Arizona Coyotes, lost its best player, has like seven guys on the injured list, can't score, can't defend, can't get saves, you name it.
Right.
And he's creating characters now,
okay,
in the media.
Okay, hold on. You're talking about the mom, right?
Yes, Mama Green.
I couldn't believe when I saw him draw. I wasn't there, but when I saw the comments started coming out that he said his mom called him up on the day that Goldobin was scratched, and she was upset, and Goldie had to get back in lineup, so he put her back in. And I went back and listened to it. I'm telling you, I listened to it. Like, I thought, right, like, okay, he's trolling us. I went back and listened to it. I thought he's joking us. But there is no, like, if you take the comment in and itself, you think he's joking. If you watch him say it, at least when I was watching, I don't know what your reaction when you were there. When I watched it on video, I was like, holy shit, he's not joking. Like, this, is too weird. Like, there's no way it's true. At the same point, he's showing no tells here that he's telling a joke.
But then he copped to it the next day.
How did he cop to it? Like, in the,
I can't remember. He was asked about Goldobin again, and then he's like, hey, you know, that was a joke about my mom. But in this market, like, honestly, the minute that he dropped the mom thing about, like, having an influence on his lineup, honestly, I thought somebody was going to seek out, like, Like, they live in Castlegar. Like, they wouldn't be that hard to find. I was fully expecting one of the talk shows to try to get Mama Green on as a guest to, like, you know, drill down on who else she likes in the lineup. But it does beg sort of this bigger question. Like, again, he's got all this stuff to try to figure out with his hockey club, and I just tweeted out what I saw. Like, I'm a reporter. That's my job. And I stand by the fact that Goldie appeared to be the odd man out at the Sunday practice.
Yeah.
And somehow he, like, he's on the ice while practice is going on while I'm tweeting this. So he's not checking Twitter while he's out there conducting a practice. So somehow he's getting this, like...
Well, that's the twist of all of this, that there was no stories about it. No, it wasn't a big topic. It was a Sunday. And I actually contacted all, like, I think Sheldon was on the air at 6:50, like... I asked all of the, like, producers around who had shows, like, was anyone talking about this? No one was talking about it. No one wrote about it. It was a tweet that you had put out there, and he was basing his reaction on that, like, on the next day. I honestly, like, I'm not even, like, I'm half joking on this. I'm half serious on this. That he planned the whole thing, like, right, like, inception day. Like, right at the start, he had Goldobin switching in a fourth line, knowing you would react or knowing people would react,
yeah,
and knowing full well that he had this mum joke ready to drop and that he was really going to play Goldobin. I don't believe that he, like, because the alternative is this, that he saw your tweet and said, I'm fucking with this guy right now. I'm coming up with something to fuck with him. I think he chose to screw with the media. It was either after he read your tweet or before, when he started skating the lines. And I'm honestly, half joking, going with before. Has he explained, like, why wasn't Goldobin skating on the line that day? Do you know?
Well, because they had extra bodies. Now Besser's injured, so the numbers are dwindling, right? But that day, he was just an extra forward.
But he started that game with the Sedins, didn't he? The next game?
Yeah.
Why was he skating with the Sedins?
Oh, that's another question. Like, again, you get so little practice time.
Yeah.
As the season goes along, you've got a young guy, you're trying to figure out who you've got and who can you win with. That does seem strange to me that, again, I'll go with your theory here, but if he is abusing practice time to screw with the media just for kicks to get, like, some entertainment, like, that just, I can't go that far with it.
Right, okay.
I can't.
Good. Because if you... And I can't either. I can't go that far either. Because if I do go that far, I'm probably going to end up in a meeting with people.
Speaking of another of my favorite moments this past week was last night after the game. And again, the game itself didn't have any of my favorite moments. But here's Jussi Jokinen, looked like a spare part, wasn't originally ever going to play, but now everybody's getting hurt. So
right. He's
in the lineup. He scores last night. And I'm thumbing through the game notes to figure out the last time he scored. And honest to God, like, it showed, like, November 2nd or something.
Right.
And I couldn't remember who he was playing for that time. He's played for four teams this season. So after the game, there's this scrum and, you know, hey, how does it feel to score? You know, the sort of general questions. And then some guy that I've never seen in my life has media accreditation.
Yeah.
And is in the room. Never seen him, so never heard him ask a question. And as the Jokinen scrum is sort of breaking off, this guy, Mr. No Name, says to Jokinen, hey, did you know you just made NHL history? You're the first guy to score for four teams in the same season. And, like, I stop my tracks, and I look, and Jokinen's got this, like, blank stare. Yeah, he's played for four teams. It was his second goal of the season last night. He hasn't scored for four teams, so I don't know where this guy, like, maybe he's got points for four different teams. I haven't gone back and looked, but, like, I just thought, like, here's your big moment. You've got media accreditation. You're coming in. You're going to have a question for a player, and then you throw that at the guy? Like, I don't know.
I heard, like, he's super happy about everything, about being in Vancouver, because he's getting, like, this big primetime role. He's been playing lots. He scored a goal. He's been playing at the Sedins. I didn't get a chance to talk. I did see some quotes where he said he didn't play all that well, but compared to everyone else and how bad the Sedins were, I thought Jokinen was good.
Yeah,
I'm almost too good. It's almost, no, like, he's not getting a contract.
If we're making a They want you, Levy. They want a mentor for your Levy. No, but like if you're making a list of guys that didn't play well last night,
he's way down.
Exactly. Bottom. Like step aside. There are way more guys that have to come to the front of that line. One guy that did play well and has since the deadline is Brendan Leipzig. It's four games. I get that, but the early returns are they're positive. They have to be. There's no other way you can look at that. This guy is making the most of his opportunity.
Yeah, and it's. I think some of it is the fact that the guys around him aren't fast. The guys around him don't play like he does, so it kind of stands out more. But his motor is unquestionable. I saw some of those Canucks Army guys have been talking about Leipzig since he was with the Marlies as a potential like I wrote about Comets Corey last night. It was like it's going. He's been like this amazing savant at picking out all of these players that the Canucks may target, and he had this thing back in May 2017 suggesting that he had this great year under Travis Green, and this is a guy the Canucks should get. And it's so far working out better than Comets Corey could have predicted, than JV could have predicted, and certainly more than Leipzig, because I was talking to Leipzig after the game, and I was, and I said to him, did you think that you were done? Like, did you worry that you were never going to make it as an NHL player? And he said, yeah, like, there were times this season, and there were also times this season when I felt like I was never going to score. This is an opportunity that wasn't going to come for him pretty much anywhere else. Like, he just wasn't going to get the chance that he's got here. It's timing. It's because of the injuries. I think the coach helps. Like, he is getting the full Travis. Travis is rolling out the red carpet treatment. He's giving up.
No, like, to earn the trust, treats. You didn't have to have practices.
That's right.
No.
Every game, he's getting the gift bag. Here you go, a little tap on the back.
Green's mom seems to like him.
Like, I'm sure Green's mom is super happy with him. Like, he is not getting the Goldobin grind, the Vertanen grind. The other guys have been grinded down. And there is one part of me that's saying, absolutely, Leipzig's got the opportunity and he's shiny. But I can't help this other piece of me that thinks, what would Goldobin do with five straight games of 18 minutes? What would Vertanen do with five, six games of 18 minutes? Leipzig was a guy getting scratched all the time in Vegas. All the time, like a regular scratch of the past month. He was on their fourth line. He got opportunity. He was never going to get in Vegas, and he's shining right now before it. You can't help but think, like, why not? Like, why do you always have to give those guys the stick? Why does Hutton always get the stick now? Like, why not play those guys? So, I don't know, man. If it works for Leipzig, why not those other guys?
All right, back it up for a sec, though. Comets Corey, like, is that a gift or a curse, though? Because he has been ahead of the curve on the Canucks.
Right.
And I'll give him the Leipzig one.
Right.
But if he had this vision of Gagne or Delzato, I know. So why didn't he, like, head them off at the pass?
Gagne.
Knock on the Canucks door and say, I'm having this vision that you're thinking of spending all this money and all this term. Like, we talk about the don't do it guy. Like, he could fill that role. Like, I can see him standing outside the office at Rogers. Like, it came to me in the night. Like, I feel it. Do something. Like, no, just take a left turn. We need an alternate ending on this DVD.
He honestly, like, if I were the front office and I was reading about all the predictions he's made,
that's what I
like,
mean.
I would hire him. And I would have him in meetings, and I'd be like, okay, Corey. Like, I think they need the way to set guy here. They need Corey over there. They need their executive in the middle. And they'd be like, Corey, what are we going to get? And they'd be like,
what are you seeing? And then he'd have to bounce it off the...
And then we'd get the way to set guy over here and say, you know what? Like, Gagne? I don't think so, boys. Like, that's not a good one. Okay.
What else do you got?
Corey, what do you think next? Pouliot? Yeah, maybe Pouliot. If we only give up a fourth and Panan, that sounds pretty good. What else do you got? Delzato? The way to set guy is like
he's jumping out of his chair.
Delzato, because Delzato
flipping the table
has squeezed Hutton out of the NHL and has pinned him down. Like, even though he's back in the lineup, okay, on Hutton, he's still only playing 15, 16 minutes a game. And no one can tell me it's because he's not playing well, because in that Rangers game, that was a great game. And honestly, it was his best game of the year. it may have been the best Ben Hutton game I've seen. I can't see them all in my head.
Right.
But it's the one that stands out the most for me right now. I'm sure there's some recency bias to that. But after a game like that, why is he not getting his tires pumped? Why is he not getting the carrot? Why is he not getting, okay, Hutton, great game. Can you pick it up in the next one? And here's another, I'm going to play like 16 minutes. Here's another 5 minutes. Hell, we had Gudbranson on the top pairing for a month. Why can't Hutton get a run on the top pairing for a week? Let's see how that goes.
Right. And then when I asked the coach, hey, it's been 5 games. The noise has sort of died down around him. You know, what do you think? Okay. And then he always has to qualify what okay means.
Right.
But I think now we know okay is just okay.
Like, yeah, he said it enough. He doesn't need to always say, when I say okay about a player, it's not a negative. I'm really just saying he's okay. Oh, we got it. Like, we understand that right now.
Yeah.
But certainly you can tell that there are some guys who don't, like, they don't get the love. They don't get the love. It doesn't come from the minutes. You see how he's being deployed. And it doesn't come from the comments. When Delzato is brought up, Travis gushes. Like, it's reality. He defends him. He gushes about him. He's got the hits. He's got the stats to back him up. And Hutton just doesn't get that kind of treatment. And that's why some of us wonder, you know, would Hutton be a guy that they would move and look to move before the draft? And I think that they have to, like, they can't bring back the same defense. And I think Hutton's got to be one of those guys. And then I think that the next choice you got to make is between Gudbranson and Tanev, and which of those two do you move?
Right, and I don't know what Hutton's trade value is. I don't think it was very high at the deadline. If they give him this run, 15 games to go, if he plays them all and he can get back to the level that you talked about, you know, maybe it boosts it a little bit. But I don't think, you know, by trading Hutton, you're not shocking your defense corps so that it's going to look totally different next year. But I'm with you.
You bring your money out. Yep. You clear a spot out. You can make some changes.
All right. Help me out here. You don't seem as alarmed about this. I've been charting this for months now. And I asked the coach this morning, and I got the frosty response. If Henderson Eden doesn't score tomorrow night, it's 50.
This is negative. I don't like where this is going. This sounds
it's
negative.
Just a fact. He's been productive. But it's a fact, right? Like, you can't hide from... It's not a slump. I kind of phrased it that way with the coach.
Okay.
50 games is shocking for a guy that plays regularly, plays in all situations. It's not an indictment of Henrik Sedin, the player. It's not going to tarnish his legacy. It's just a damn weird season that on November 14th, when he scored his second goal of the season, Daniel had 3 goals, Henrik had 2.
Right.
Daniel scored 18 goals since, and Henrik hasn't scored. Like, 50 games without a goal is bizarre. And I asked the coach, and he just said, like, look, I'm not critiquing his season.
Not
big deal.
Not worried about it.
Well, of course.
He's
worried about my Twitter account.
Worried about his mom. He's worried about trolling the media. He's never worried about a guy who's not scoring. Lou Eriksson never scores. I'm not worried about him. Granlund's not scoring, coach. What do you think? Not worried about him. Henrik's got 2 goals for the whole season. Not worried about him. But here's what gets me about Henrik is, he used to shoot.
He scored 29 goals 1 year.
Right. And even back then, we joke, Henrik never shoots the puck.
Pass first.
But now it's got to, like, an obscene, like, a ridiculous... comical, like, he literally...
Well, there was the night the Green said post-game, oh, we were laughing on the... coaches, we were laughing on the bench because Henrik shot.
That was on the power
play. On the power play.
Right. And he's only got, I think...
The coach is laughing at his captain because he shot the fucking puck.
Like, I think he only has 10 power play shots for the entire season. Like, he literally doesn't shoot. And what gets me is, like, what's the story of the Sedins? No one works harder. No one trains more. You got to see their test results.
No, maybe Delzato.
They would blow you away. And I always think, like, why all that training? Like, why not work on your shot? Like, you spend all of these hours, like, running up hills, sacks of potatoes, you know, on your back as you run through the Swedish forest.
why not find a garage and just, like, pepper the wall with shot? Like,
we talked about going to shooting school with, like, Besser. But remember a couple weeks ago, talked about to spend the summer with Besser in Minnesota at Besser Shooting School. Like,
but I'm not, like, that isn't even, like, he's so far, that's so far away from being in his, like, what if I said to him, like, okay, here's the deal. Take 100 shots a day. That's all. It's not going to take that. However long, you know, 20 minutes to take. But take your time. Take 100 shots every day for a summer. And come back. And I'm telling you, he's going to have more than two goals if he does that next season. He plays like it's like there's a appendage paralyzed. Like,
It's bizarre. That's what I mean. Like, it's just it's not
he's
normal.
An amazing
like
he's hockey player.
And he's putting up huge points for a guy
probably
that's 37.
A Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and for a 37-year-old, like, productively, he's having a good season that way.
Right.
There are issues, the penalties, the, you know, defensive play.
So in his quiet moments, like, what's he think? Like, what do you think he's thinking?
I don't know, but, like, to most, I would say to every other player in the NHL, the thought of scoring a goal, like, resonates with them.
Right.
And for Henrik, like, that part of the game is just, and it's a pretty important part of the game,
right.
Like, but it's just been shut off. Like, it's that tap has been completely turned off. Like, I have no expectation that he's going to score a goal the rest of this season. And if they come back next year, like, has he scored his final goal
right.
in the National Hockey League?
Yeah.
And I think that's a valid question.
Yeah, and I think, like, if someone says to you, man, you're asking bad questions, or it says to me, like, oh, that was a really bad story. Like, I start, like, even that Babcock thing, like, I was on a, like, 40 minutes rooting through Babcock videos. Like, there must be a part of him that is like, why do I only have two goals? Like,
you think
there must
so?
Be a part of that
ball. Like, a loose puck would just squirt free. Guys, score. Like, just, like, you know, slide through the slot, and maybe there's a loose puck, and who knows? But you're right. It starts with the act of actually shooting that puck, and it just, like, again, it's now a foreign concept to him.
Yeah, he has to restart, like, he's, like, when it comes to shooting. He may be the greatest passer in Canucks
history.
He's among the best passers
in his generation,
even now. But he needs to, like, look at his shooting like he's, like, an 8-year-old. Like, how am I going to learn to shoot? Like, how am I need to start from ground zero. Like, I'm not even, like, this isn't, I'm not being, like, he needs to start at ground zero with that shot. It's that bad. And he's that reluctant, I think, because of it, to use it. Because I've never seen him shoot this few times in a season.
So Besser's out. Vanek doesn't play here anymore. Berchi's gone. Not that Eriksson scored a lot, but he's out. Like, who is going to score the goals down the stretch here? And I put this on a poll this morning out on Twitter because I looked last year. Final 16 games, the team scored 29 goals. So not even two a game. And remember, you remember what the final stretch was. Like, it was ridiculous how boring, how low scoring. Like, there was nothing. There was no takeaway to the final month of last season.
Right.
And now with all those guys out of the lineup, like, I am concerned that this year could easily morph into what we had to endure last year. So they score one goal last night against the Arizona Coyotes with Besser out of the lineup. Like, I'm going to start charting goals after Besser. And it's not going to be difficult.
No.
Like, that won't be a tough task, but I will be charting on a regular basis goals after Besser. So, look, they've got four wins in their last 16 games as a team with Besser, with Berchi, with Vanek for a good chunk of that. They've got 15 games to go. Like, would you bank on more than, like, somehow they'll win a couple. They've got Arizona twice. There's some bad teams left on the schedule. They'll win a few. Like, if I set the bar at 3.5, would you take wins over the final 15 games?
I'll take the over,
You take the over on that?
Yeah. If it's 3.5?
I don't know. If I put the bar at 4.5, would you take the over?
I think I would.
5 of 15? Like,
6.5, I'd start to, that would be the number.
You think they can come close to winning half the remaining games?
You think they can win 7 of 15?
No, they've got 4 in their last 16
right.
with a fairly full roster.
Right, okay. All right, maybe 5.5. Yeah, 5.5 would be that.
Like, what are we in for? I know you are. Like, so let's wrap things up as we leave people. Like, what are your expectations? Like, what excites you about the final 15 games?
I think that this has been underplayed. I do think that there's immense pressure on Bo Horvat right now. I think that the coach, I think that Bo Horvat's going to be undermanned on that top line. He's going to be in a tough spot with whomever they choose to play with them there. He's not going to be with bona fide top six guys. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to play 20 minutes a night, to be on the first power play unit, to still kick in some penalty kill time. He's on the second or third penalty kill duos that they're using. He still averages about a minute a game killing penalties. It's not going to be the Sedins. He's just not going to play the Sedins. Travis isn't going to do it a lot. So, I'm a bit concerned about how Bo is going to handle it all. And last year, when they lost their last eight straight games, it wasn't great, and it was among the most struggling or the most obstacles, the most difficult stretch that I've seen for him. He just got two assists in those eight games. In the past two games, he hasn't got a shot on net. He can be better. I do think he will be better. But the reality is, he doesn't have the horses around him to help insulate him, to help keep his head above water. So I am worried about how he's going to perform down the stretch. I do think he's one of those guys that you can check mark beside and say we can win with. And if the Canucks are at all, one of the things that they say they're always worried about is guys being under, in the deep end too soon, being underwater, being in situations where they're not ready for it. Right now in these next 15 games, I'm more worried about Horvat being in that situation than anyone else.
Well, and I thought this was interesting, and you wrote about it, province.com. Usually when guys, they turn pro, and I sort of think that there's some pressure within hockey circles to leave junior hockey behind. You're a pro now, whatever happened in junior, have ties to your...
Don't bring it up.
Yeah. And today, he referenced, you were talking about the tough times here, and last year too, and he went straight to the... boy in London, three straight Memorial Cups, and it was I want to go back. I kind of felt this he was longing for his junior hockey days again.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard, he's not a guy that's referenced the London program an awful lot, but those clearly were the good times for him.
Yeah.
And that was my takeaway from that. I was this is a guy that, this losing is getting to him. He wants to go back, not go physically back, but he wants to go back to a place in time when things were good.
No, he wants to win. And my whole, even from the first rookie year, I remember talking about this then, saying, you can't waste the Horvat years. You've got to find players for the Horvat years. Stop being myopic. Stop getting stopgap guys. Stop trying to find win-now guys. Get a plan to try to get a team together so that when Horvat's 23, 24, 25, 26, and he's competing against that in that division all the time, he's got the guys around him to win. They still haven't been able to put that together. There's a couple that may help him. They need more of those guys coming. And it's honestly, that was part of my, when the draft pick story kind of took over the city for a little bit.
Right.
And when I first started thinking, this is weird. Why don't they have picks? Why don't they ever trade for picks? Before I started writing about it, and I started trying to really, make it a big deal, because I do feel it's important. I did have this thought to myself, this is one of the stories that's going to bring the city together, because the gym, the biggest gym supporters are going to see intellectually, they're going to see that the team hired a scout as a coach. They're going to see that the best thing he's done here in his 4 years, the best part of the Canucks has been their draft. They're going to rally around. I felt I was going to get them. They were going to rally around me. And I knew that I was going to get the general rebuild this, because, that's been their theory for a long time. Get cap space, use it, weaponize it, get draft picks. They're Lyndon's biggest critics have been those guys. So I thought by saying, let's go out and the Canucks should go out and try to target top 90 draft picks here, because they need to put together guys that are going to help this crew, this core, in 2 to 3 years. And they're not there right now. There's not enough of them right now. And all of it comes from a base. Now Besser's part of that, but all of it originates from a base of help this fucking Horvat guy. Help him. He works so hard. And this is one of the stories that I think has gone under the radar. I've mentioned it here. I've written about it a bit. I don't see it talked about as much as it should be talked about. He missed 47 days. And how many games? 18? You wrote about it? You tweeted about it? He missed 47 days. He was out for 18 games. He was in a walking boot for four of those weeks, and when he came back, they tested him, and all of his test results smoked his test results from when he came back after that. He worked super hard in the summer, and after he came back in the summer and did his, you know, a preseason testing there at training camp, he beat those test results after being spent 4 weeks. And that is a guy that put incredible hours into working out, incredible hours in preparation. And he deserves, like, he deserves the contract, and he deserves players. He deserves support, and he deserves, like, a smart front office that's going to do the little things to get him a team, because that's what he needs. That's what he wants. That's what he was talking about today, that frustration. I want to win. Like, this is killing me. We won in junior. I want to win. You're not going to win until he has a collection of guys that can support him.
And next year's his fifth season in the National Hockey League. Like, time goes by right. in a hurry. When you, to your point about not wasting, you know, there's a lot of guys, there's a hell of a lot of guys who don't get 5 years in the NHL. Like, that's not insignificant that next year's his fifth year in the NHL, and we see that guys are peaking at an earlier age and playing better and playing more significant roles at a younger age, you know, more now than ever before. So I think that absolutely he has the right to be frustrated, but I also think he's got to be a little concerned about what is going on around him.
Yeah, and he didn't say that.
No.
And, like, we're not speaking for him, but, like, you can't help, I don't think, draw, like, think about these things where you look at the spot he's in.
But let me ask you this then. You know, you talked about Henrik coming out in, you know, his buckets and ready yeah. to pour all the negativity in. Right. At some point, it's going to be Bo Horvat that's got those I buckets. Know. And is he conditioned? Like, I do wonder.
I'm worried. I'm a bit worried.
Like, we've already anointed him the next captain. And yet, I'd like to see, over these final 15, like, I would love to see the Sedins. I'd love to see people in their PR department and management go to the guys that they have deemed the next leaders and say, you know what, after these losses, it's time for you guys to get a taste, to be there night in, night out. Because again, last night, worst performance of the season, Daniel and Henrik and Jokinen. Like, it was hard to find guys in that room last night.
They talked about this, how they learned that from Trevor. They learned that taking accountability is important. And I am worried. I am worried. Like, that is one of the things. Like, when people talk about that word mentoring, like, it's super vague and weird, and I hate it. But if there is one thing off the ice that I would hope that some of those guys in that room pick up on, it's that there is a certain responsibility that you have to take for your actions. And when things aren't going your way, a man steps up and takes, like, and says, like, look, my bad. I suck. I did this wrong. I did that wrong. We weren't good enough. You don't have to do it all the time. You got to pick your spots, though. And when things are down and when things are at the lowest, that's when you're needed the most. And that's why, like, I saw Henrik and I was reminded, like, I am reminded. He hasn't done that for all the losses this year, but for the really bad ones, he knows that he's got to be the shield. He's got to be that shield to step up and take all the bullets, take all the action, and to protect his flock behind him. And I don't, like, I haven't seen that in Bo. I hope it's there. I think he needs it to be there because, hell, we asked tough, pointed
apparently
questions.
That's what I hear.
Babcock's not going to get, yeah. So they're getting it in there.
I will say this, and I give Henrik credit last night, because I was worried that we were going to go in that room and he was going to try to tell us right. that, you know, they didn't give up much. They kept the Coyotes to the outside. That it was close. That they should have won. They could have won. And, you know, I thought he painted the right picture last night. Like, he wasn't trying to hide from that performance.
They were oddly all on the same page, though. Like, that when
sure.
Like, I think that was the
Coyotes are 7-2-1 in the last. Like, they
said that, but they also said we were embarrassing. It's not
sure.
good enough.
No, they're given the script.
Right, and you did say when we were going down, you said to me, Travis is going to blow it. Like, this is not going to be a happy Travis press conference. He's not going to downplay this loss. He's not going to try to cover it up. You, like, how? Why did you have that theory? How did you know? Because he didn't. You know, like, he was as tough on his team as he's been all year.
Right, because it was the first game without Besser, and I asked that question, and I did kind of feel like, you know, one-all tie all season long, when they've needed a goal, who do they look to? Besser, right? You look up and down the bench, there's no Besser. And I did kind of feel like, don't know if they felt sorry for themselves, but they just kind of, once Besser's done, they know. Like, the season's been done for a while, but when Besser's gone, like, the season is done. And I just thought, if they accept that as a group, if Travis accepts that performance and that result, then, you know, the inmates are running the asylum, for lack of a better term, the rest of the way. So I kind of felt he had to draw a line in the sand. I thought he might be a little firmer, but you could tell he was pretty agitated. And apparently the video session this morning was a little different. There wasn't a whole lot of sugar in the video session. I'm guessing that there, you know, I mean, I don't know how you'd find any highlights in that performance last night. Maybe, you know, a couple of the Sam Gagne shots or the Jokinen goal. But other than that, there weren't highlights. So it sounded like the video session was pretty depressing. As you can imagine, it would be in the wake of a loss like last night. So 15 to go. We'll continue to do the podcast.
Are we wrapping up?
I think we are.
Okay, because we got to talk about Gilly. We got to talk about potentially, like,
Gilly getting back in.
Well, I wrote about this in the Poppies. I mentioned this in the Poppies. And then someone in Seattle has reached out to Mike. And it's not, I'm not saying this is going to happen. And I totally think, like, it's a way long shot. And I believe that the Seattle franchise, I think most people think Holland's going to be the guy to run the team. But there are some interesting links between the Leiwikis and Mike. In fact, Tim's brother Todd worked for the Canucks and Gillis back in 2009. Like, how wild would it be? Like, if they wanted to get a... Like, I honestly think it would be the best rivalry in all of hockey if they got Mike... If Mike brought the old band back together... And I'm not just talking Lawrence and Lorne and the other guys. Like, if he got AV there, too, he brought that, because I don't know AV is surviving in New York for much longer. If they brought that whole group to Seattle, they would instantly have, like, the fan, like, it would be, there would be mutiny in Vancouver, because half of the guy, like, a lot of people in Vancouver still really look back fondly on the Mike years. I mean, I think it would be the best rivalry in the NHL, and it would be instant, and it would be crazy. Crazy.
Get Luongo back, have the Canucks paying some of his salary, the tail end of his contract there.
I don't think Luongo's coming back.
No,
like, just the Twitter, like, between Seattle social media and Vancouver.
Sure, I'm not sure that the people in Seattle would fully grasp all of the arms and legs to that story. I mean, they'd learn quickly.
A few interactions with the anti-Gillis crowd.
They'd be brought up to speed in a hurry.
God,
you could write the handbook on the whole rivalry.
Oh,
you know, what you need to know, Canucks Seattle rivalry for dummies. You could write the book.
When I started thinking about it, like, I got almost too excited about it, because it's probably not going to happen. But I do think that there would be, like, Mike would have, he would get his digs in. It would be, there would be some public stuff. It would be fun, man. It would be a lot of fun. And if anyone in the NHL's head office is listening to this, you got to think, like, it would be epic, and it would be epic immediately.
Well, there you go. If the commish was in town, he knows what's good for hockey, apparently. He knows how to rebuild. Maybe he knows what's good for establishing a rivalry right away. Maybe
he
commish. Well, and the league often has a say, or at least directs ownership groups.
Yeah.
And
they have more than a say.
Yeah, so we won't discount
it. The league has a lot of influence.
Dare to dream, Botch. Dare
to
dream. Hey, I want to thank everybody at Woody's Pub for being a terrific host here. Had some fun, a great crowd on hand. Always good to get the podcast out on the road. And we thank Eagle Ridge GM, as we always do. They've been terrific partners for us over the years that we've been doing the podcast. Again, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, please support them the way that they support us. Start your search online at eagleridgegm.com. And of course, the showroom, you can find them. You can walk the showroom floor, check out the lot, all the inventory they've got. 2595 Barnett Highway, not far from Woody's here in Coquitlam. Fun, as always. 15 games to go. I don't know how much fun those are going to be, but